It's time for All Things Gardening with Charlie Nardozzi. Hey there, Charlie.
Hi, Mary.
We might have often heard the folklore about carrots loving tomatoes in the garden. Can you explain exactly what that means and give us some examples about the science behind it?
I've been reading a new book by a colleague and friend of mine, Jessica Walzer, called Plant Partners. And what she does is take a new, fresh look at companion planting. So carrots love tomatoes. We've always heard that, right? And a lot of people have tried different companion planting techniques. The problem is most of it's based on folklore, and most of it is based on personal experiences. So it's hard to replicate it. But Jessica got into the science behind it and found out that there's actually a lot of scientific research that proves certain plant partners work together really well. And so I just want to talk a little bit about this, and I'm actually doing a webinar on this on February 23rd that you can sign up for on my Gardening with Charlie website. So first of all, she looks at it as far as sharing spaces. And we've all kind of done, you know, the lettuce planted around the tomatoes, for example. You harvest the lettuce before the tomatoes get too big. Sharing space underneath the ground, too, like planting onions next to carrots. Carrots are mining the nutrients down low in the soil. Onions are mostly on the top layers of the soil. So those kinds of things are probably pretty familiar, as well as sharing nutrients, planting greens next to your peas. So the nitrogen from the peas will help the greens. Or what I did last year is having edamame and bush beans with a row of kale in the middle. And the kale grew well all summer because of the beans. The beans died back, then the kale took over in the fall. But where she really focuses on is on the pest part of it. And that's what most people think of when they think of companion planting. So there's a way to lure and trap your pests. So for example, if you have a lot of flea beetles on your eggplants, plant bok choy or radishes a little bit away from them. That's where all the flea beetles will go. Then you can either spray or kill them there and keep them off of your eggplants. If you have problems like with squash vine borers, plant Hubbard squash instead of some of the other squashes, and they'll all go to the Hubbard squash, and the vine borers will be there, not on your pumpkins or your acorn squashes. And they also, these plant partners, will mask scents too. So planting nasturtiums next to zucchini keeps squash bugs away. And planting basil in your tomatoes keeps the tomato hornworms from laying so many eggs. So there's lots of different examples of there. If you're interested in it, like I said, the book is Plant Partners. I'm doing a webinar on it. And there's a lot of ways to kind of experiment in your own garden this summer.
Okay, here's a question now from Rebecca in Montpelier. Rebecca writes, I'd love to ask Charlie Nardozzi about layering compost in a no-dig bed. I just got his new book, and I'm dreaming about my garden as the temperature outside is 2 below. Rebecca writes, can I layer hot manure into the bed if there are sufficient composting layers on top, or will that burn the plants? And they also write, will incorporating hay into the layers lead to terrible weeds, or will it break down under the other layers? And how long should manure sit before incorporating it into the garden?
Well, generally, Rebecca, you want to keep that hot manure to sit, you know, a number of months, 3-4 months or so before, so it can break down before you can actually use it in the garden. So I would not put it in there as a fresh hot manure, because if you plant anything, say a few weeks later, even a month later in there, it could be too hot for the little roots and could burn the root system. So I would kind of compost that a little bit before you put it in. As far as the hay goes, though, if you bury that hay down, say 3 or 4 inches with some compost on top of it, you should not get those weed seeds germinating, so that should not be an issue.
This next inquiry from Patty in Derby is more about seeking a particular plant. Patty writes, I heard a plant mentioned on a radio show by a woman in the Williston area who created a rain garden, and she used a plant called Lord Leaf or Lord something, notable for its leaves being so big. And Patty writes, they hold rainwater and you can watch birds bathing in the leaves. Can you help identify this plant for me? I'd really appreciate it.
Well, Patty, I spent a bunch of time on this one trying to figure it out. I couldn't find any Lord Leaf or Lord plants. Then I started thinking about large leaf plants that would do well in a rain garden. And of course, there's a whole bunch of those. The elephant ear or alocasia is a bulb that produces a large leaf. Gunnera is another large leaf, but that one's not really hardy around here. Pedicides or butterbur is, but that's kind of invasive, so you may not want to use that one. And I've kind of fell on the best one might be a hosta, like Summon Substance, those big hostas with the big leaves. Then I ran across an arum, A-R-U-M, called Lords and Ladies, and I thought, well, maybe that's it. This is a woodland plant that has not huge leaves, but large leaves in the spring that I guess water could collect on. But then it dies back in late summer and sends up a little flower in the fall. So That might be a possibility, but I think like the hosta might be the best one to use. I'm not sure. Maybe some of our listeners know some of these Lord's plants out there.
If you've got a question for Charlie to answer on an upcoming episode, just send it to us at vpr.org and search All Things Gardening. Thanks so much, Charlie.
You're welcome, Mary. And we'll be talking about seed starting next. So if you have seed starting questions, send them along. I'll make sure I try to answer them in the next episode. And I'll be seeing you in the garden.